Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Craig Hoffman.
I think you've made me feel better than anyone else on the show today. So thanks for that.
The Hoffman Show.
I'm happy to alleviate any stress and pressure that you might feel. You're my guy. You guys are doing a great job. Keep, you're doing great, sweetie. I promise.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Anthony, clip that for an open. Hour number two of the Hoffman Show here on the Team 980. Again, we are short tonight because we have the Butler-Georgetown game here on the Team 980. You're home for the Hoyas at 6:15. So we got a couple of things to get to this hour. First, we will play a Take Command bit with Logan for you here in a second for today's Not My Beat. And then 5:30, we will be rejoined by our friend Clint Yates, best friend of the show. He's been out. We will talk about the Commanders season, kind of put a bow on it from Clinton's perspective. And then, of course, next week, Super Bowl week, we'll spend a lot of time breaking down that matchup and yada, yada, yada. Maybe do some mock draft stuff this hour. Might also bring back the weekend preview. Ooh. But right now, today's edition of Not My Beat, which we're going to skip the whole Not My Beat open. We're just going to get right to it. Logan and I on Take Command talked about the Commanders' top needs. And we started with the offensive line, which led to a pretty interesting discussion that we'll share with you now here on The Hoffman Show. Take Command Podcast. This is Craig Hoffman. Logan Paulson. Well, again, it is officially the offseason, sadly. So now we get the great fun of looking how the Commanders are going to improve this roster. And I think that there are a lot of spots that obviously can improve. But if you think about like your wish list, you're writing Santa Claus Adam Peters here. And you're like, hey, Santa Adam, I want some new players. What do you think that your list would look like? And what do you think that Adam, who's down there in Mobile with you, obviously, well, not with you. He's also in Mobile doing his job as you are in Mobile doing yours. What do you think that he's really looking for looking for this offseason?
Yeah, I'm not going to project what I think Adam wants because, you know, he's way more ahead of the process than me, right? He's going to talk to Dan. He's going to talk to the position coaches. He's going to talk to director of college scouting and figure out like the best, like what's available in the draft, what's available in free agency. He's going to talk to the pro scouting director.
And real quick, like they've been doing that for years.
Yes.
For this class. Like it's important to point out that on their process, like they have guys that already know the 2026 draft class.
Yes.
And probably some contour of the 27. They know who's going to be a free agent in 26 and 27. And since 2024, since they got here, they've had certain things possibly circled for this year's classes. So when we do what we're going to do next, which is take a look at those classes, this is something that they've been years ahead on. And maybe Adam and some of the people more towards the top were more focused on the here and now, and they're just now getting caught up by those people. But those things have been happening in parts of the Commander's front office for ever since this front office was put together.
Yeah, like, you know, I just thinking about Adam and what he's doing right now. First off, he's managing the team through the season. Then he's coming down here. He's watching he's evaluating the conclusion of this year, right? Kind of putting a bow on this year. But he's also thinking forward. He's got to have a really good grasp, and I know he does, just from being with him in San Francisco and talking with him briefly. Like, he's got a great grasp of the free agency class. He's got a great grasp of the draft class. And it's just the amount of information that position has to digest every single day, seemingly, is just, it's insane. So, like, you know, people talk about, like, making your own luck and kind of how was he so good in his first year. I mean, his staff must be tremendous to be able to distill all this information down and get where you need to go. So I'm not going to, again, they're way ahead of me in terms of this process. But for me, when I'm looking at the roster, I look at this and I say to myself, like, I always offensive line talent. That's like, I don't know if that's number one, but it's definitely in the list, right? It could be number two, number three, but offensive line talent. And it doesn't need to be a starter, but we need offensive line depth. I need a developmental piece, right? I look at Philly. I look at Detroit. I look at even Tampa Bay to a certain extent. like they're always drafting offensive line to eventually fill out when guys leave, to be in there for injury. And if there's somebody in this draft class, we can talk about a couple names if you want. This offensive line class this year is kind of weak in the draft. And traditionally, it's hard to find guys in free agency. And I haven't really looked at the free agency list yet. But even if you take a guy like Anthony Belton from NC State, he's big fella, he's tackle guard kind of guy. He might not be ready this year, but you look at the physical profile and you say, that's going to make this group better just in terms of physicality, size, speed, weight. If you have a coach, you feel like they can develop him. And again, that's, I just think even if he's not starting for you this year, like adding talent to that group is so important. And that's a group in terms of the guys that played here this year that I have the utmost respect for. I love what they did. I love how they competed. I love how they fought. So this is not an indictment of those five guys, but I'm just saying if I put my GM hat on, like what are some things that I think need to get better? It's I want more talent on the offensive line. So that's probably that's in the list somewhere.
That's I would say both lines, but we'll start on the offense.
Yeah, I was going to go one at a time so we can
for sure. But I think that's like every team should basically always be looking to get better on both lines. You cannot go wrong. And again, like looking at the, and I think, you know, I was thinking about this and then I forgot that The Athletic does this every year. They did like a lessons learned from the Final Four. I was already thinking about doing this of like lessons learned from the Chiefs and the Eagles.
Smart.
And we can do a version of this on this show. I was going to do it on the radio show too, but you look at their lines and like, they're incredible. They're two of the best offensive lines in the league. The Chiefs' strength this year was the interior of their offensive line. Obviously, they've had Chris Jones, and they've done a good job filling in around him with guys like Karlaftis that have a knack for making big plays. They got a couple other guys on the defensive line that are great. And like obviously for the Chiefs, we know that like Pat is the thing that drives everything. But you look at what they've spent their money on outside of Pat, and I think the Chiefs are really instructive because the Commanders look like they have one of those dudes at quarterback. So how do you build around one of those guys? And the offensive line, making sure that guy stays upright, making sure that guy can maximize his talent. And also, can you support that guy with a run game? And that element of it, you know, we talk about like, oh, great quarterback, need a good offensive line. Everyone's just like the health of the quarterback. And it's like, well, also, you know what can keep a quarterback healthy? Having him have the ability to turn around and hand the ball off 25 times a game and close
Detroit,
out games.
Right? Look at Detroit. Yeah. Like Jared Goff was a guy that was supposed to be a bridge quarterback until they drafted somebody. But you get with the, you get in a group with a great offensive line, a system that supports them. And no one, I mean, Jared Goff was like almost an MVP candidate this year, right? And and I would not say it's only because of the offensive line, because he deserves a ton of credit for how he played. But that offensive line is a big driver of their success. And Philly is the same thing. Like, we've talked kind of a lot about our perspective on Jalen Hurts in terms of he's not like this top flight passer, but he doesn't turn the football over. You can run the ball and you can give him, and it's one of the best pass protecting groups in the NFL. So he can hold the ball and see what he's got to see. And it covers up some of his deficiencies. So, you know, even when you're talking about Jaden Daniels, who I think is, I can't overstate the year he had, right? You know, even when you're being hyperbolic, it's like, oh, he should have been MVP. And it's like, even though that sounds like a crazy person, like it's actually not that crazy. So
he should finish fourth or fifth in MVP voting. Yes. And if he doesn't, it's a sham.
Right, 100%. But if you think about the things that he struggles with, it's like subtle pocket movements. It's like keeping it, you know what I mean? Like those things that, you know, like Tom Brady and some of those other guys did such a great job of in their careers, like he can develop in that for sure. But what if we just got better on the offensive line? And that's hard to do. It's not like, oh, get better on the offense. Everyone's trying to do that. But if we're able to do that, it does limit some of his weaknesses, right? And I think if you can limit and hide some of his weaknesses and let him give him a couple years to develop, like think about where this offense could go. Think about CJ Stroud this year. Think about the regression he had. A lot of that is tied to the offensive line and the regression that they had. So I look at that and I say to myself, like, that's why it's so important, you know, and it's always been important. It always will be important. I do think people, you know, there was this movement in analytics to say, oh, well, if you have the number one wide receiver, it deleverages the offensive line because you get somebody who can get open versus man-to-man coverage. You don't have to hold up as long. I understand that. But to me, if you can, and again, it's hard, like teams every year try. I think about New York and all the draft capital, the New York Giants and all the draft capital they've invested in the offensive line, and none of it worked out. Like, there's a reason it's hard to find five guys who can play NFL football, you know? And so that's where it's like, you got to hit on the pick, you got to hit on the free agent acquisition. It's got to make sure it's the right fit. You got to make sure that person develops in your scheme. But if you can get something resembling one of these top offensive lines, and I think back to Kansas City, talk about learning something from a team that's in the last little bit here, right? Their left tackle situation was a disaster this year. And this is Patrick Mahomes' like worst statistical season in like 5 years, right? Like since his rookie, since his first year starting, basically. And I would say a lot of that has to do with a lack of confidence in that left tackle position. Now Mahomes is a beast. He's able to overcome it. But when, like last year, for example, when that position was locked in, relatively speaking, like he was outstanding. So I think that's why, to me, it's such an important part of the roster development this offseason.
Yeah, and you look at Buffalo as another great example.
Oh, great example.
They massively invested, and they kind of remade their team. They were a team that, much like Washington this year, where it's like, yeah, we'll let Jaden throw it 40 times. We'll let Josh throw it 40, 45 times because he's that good, and we can win a bunch of games. But they were the best version of themselves this year in a year where roster-wise they were probably down a little bit. They took some cap hits and things
absolutely
to try to be able to revamp for this upcoming season. And they made it to the AFC Championship game and are, you know, a couple calls and a couple inches away from going to the Super Bowl because they leaned into their running game really heavily, deleveraged Josh, made it when Josh was throwing that it was just the most effective version. And their receiving core was booty this year, all due respect. Shakir is actually a good player, and Curtis had a couple of nice moments, and Amari Cooper was good when he was there. But like, it's not Chase and Higgins.
Sure.
And so I think that just shows, like, if you have a dude at quarterback, that dude can elevate your receivers, especially if you give him the O-line support. And so, yeah, I think O-line, you know, even though I would love Nick to turn into a swing piece inside.
Yes, right.
I would love that because that means you've got a really solid left guard. We'll see what they do at right tackle with Wiley. Like, these guys, they're NFL caliber. They're like lower end caliber NFL starters or really, really, really high end backups. They're not bad football players, but can you get better than that? And then what happens when that's the case?
Yeah. And I think that offensive line is just a really great example of like what you're looking for, right? You draft an offensive guard in the second round.
Osiris Torrance,
right? Spencer Brown is a fifth round pick that was from a small school that develops. I forget if Deion Dawkins was a first or second round pick, but again, like
higher pedigree guy.
You've invested, but you've also developed guys with traits to become those starting caliber pieces. And I think that's where cultivating an offensive line is so challenging because you're not going to be able to invest 5 first round draft picks there. You got to make sure that guys develop. And I think to this staff's credit, when you look at Andrew Wiley, I think is a great example. Like, talk about a guy that they were able to elevate this year, right, in terms of his production in the offensive line. So maybe you feel okay with him about starting. Obviously, Sam Cosmi gets the investment, second-round pick. And then just can you get a little bit more talented? Does Brandon Coleman develop? Can you get a little more talented? Just, again, talent is the key word here, and develop that talent and kind of become a farm for offensive linemen. And one of the things that these offensive line coaches seem to be able to do is kind of develop and cultivate those guys. We didn't even talk about Tyler Biadasz, kind of big free agent signing, but you see how they've got the bones of something. Now it's just, can you deleverage certain players and get more talented across that front? And I think Buffalo's offensive line is a good example of the best way to kind of construct that.
Yeah, Brady's done Joe Brady, their OC, has done a good job. Also, you think of the coaches, you know, Jeff Statland, the O-line coach in Philly's a beast and one of the best developers. And that's why you can take a Jordan Mailata and turn him in from a rugby player into an all-pro left tackle. Hank Fraley in Detroit, like these guys are excellent. And Bobby Johnson obviously did a great job this year. And we'll see if they can continue to do that moving forward. All right, for more from Take Command, including what we think of the rest of the roster, go to Take Command, because that's how podcasts work. You go search Take Command wherever you get yours, and Logan and I will be back next week with a recap of his trip to Mobile. He was down at the Senior Bowl this week, so we will get a lot deeper into the NFL draft over the next couple of weeks. Obviously, talk about the free agent class as well. I literally just booked my flights for Indy, so I will be at the Combine again this year. Very much looking forward to that. So lots of coverage coming on Take Command and, of course, right here on The Hoffman Show. We get back. Quick thoughts on all of that. I'll take a look at some of the top free agent lists and throw out a couple of names to keep an eye out for Washington on the O-line front. Then Clint Yates joins us at 5:30 on the Team 980. Clint Yates joins the show coming up in about 6 minutes here on the Team 980. Looking forward to welcoming Yates back to the program. Real quick, just some names to think about for the Commanders on their offensive line. We just played for you the Take Command section of our the offensive line section of Take Command. We talked about some of the guys that are some of the needs for the Commanders. I'll get it right eventually. I'm also trying to type and pull up the list that I should have pulled up in the break, which is a really excellent job by me. ESPN top 50 NFL free agents. See, if I say it out loud and type, then we actually get to where we need to be faster. But there are some good offensive linemen available. The number one on the market is Trey Smith, who you can watch in the Super Bowl because he is a guard for Kansas City. He's played really, really well. He's really come on. And they have a problem in Kansas City cap-wise of potentially trying to keep him. He is a guy that's played well enough that he's going to be expensive. They already have a huge contract for their other guard. They've paid Creed Humphrey their center. They still are trying to figure out left tackle. They were hoping that they solved that with Kingsley Suamatia, the draft pick that they took from BYU, but he didn't really pan out, and I don't know how confident they are that he's going to pan out. So they might have to spend some money at tackle. So some real interesting machinations for Kansas City that ultimately probably lead them to going in a different direction. He was someone who was really well-liked by Ryan Poles, the general manager of the Bears, when he was in Kansas City and was a part of the group that drafted him. So Chicago definitely is going to be one of the teams that's probably in on Trey Smith, but I could definitely see them going the Kansas City route. I mean, it's funny because it's where they got Wiley and it's where they got Allegretti, but Trey Smith is a different caliber of player for Washington to consider on the inside. Up the Beltway, up 95 to the other Beltway, Ronnie Staley, 31 years old, played tackle for a decade in Baltimore, was just an awesome player who had some injury issues the last couple of years, but this year was much healthier and looked like Ronnie Staley again. And like, if you gave him a 2 to 3 year deal for a guy that was 11th amongst offensive tackles with a pass block win rate in 2024, could he be an upgrade at tackle, and would you move maybe Brandon Coleman to right tackle and put Staley at left? Like, that I think is an interesting thing. Or do you kick Coleman inside? I think probably not. I think they're probably going to stick with the Brandon Coleman at left tackle deal and maybe look to upgrade right tackle, which probably takes Staley off the board. But it's just another guy who's going to be at the top of the free agent market. If you go down a little bit, let's see who else. You got a couple of great edges. Like, there's a lot more defensive talent that I'm interested in. Cam Robinson at tackle is interesting. He's going to be 29 this year, and he could play right tackle potentially. Will Fries, guard from Indianapolis, he's coming off a leg injury that was a season ender back in week 5, but he had his best season of his career up to that point. Small sample size, of course, just four games and change, but he's going to be 27 this year, and you could get a bunch of good years out of him. I think another interesting one to watch, depending on what you're looking for, is if you take some guys that are maybe going to take a year or two, do you go after Zach Martin, Cowboys? He's not what he used to be, but he's still not bad, and he's a veteran that certainly would continue to help keep the standard high, and at one point was one of the absolute best at his position, and I think that's been a good formula for Washington. I'm not that interested in that, but I also don't hate it considering the history there. Mekhi Becton is a free agent who obviously has played tackle poorly, and then it was awesome at guard this year for the Eagles. I would think Philadelphia might try to bring him back. Kevin Zeitler from Detroit, another older player, 35. James Daniels was in Pittsburgh, 27-year-old. At that point, you're like, I'd rather probably go draft pick once you get a little bit farther down. I mean, Tevin Jenkins is really interesting. He is listed as a guard on this list, but he's played tackle as well. He's drafted as a tackle. So super talented, bad fit in Chicago, or just isn't that good. And he's had a ton of injuries. But if they think they can get him right, do they take a flyer on a guy like that? And that more or less rounds out the offensive lineman on Matt Bowen's list of the top 50 guys that are available. For whatever it's worth, none of the Commanders free agents are on this list. The guy who ranks highest just missed category, Zach Ertz for Washington. So I think that's interesting. Like, no, unless I'm missing, like, I don't think, Jeremy Chin's not on this list. So hopefully that means that a lot of other people don't think that these Washington free agents are worth that much either. Washington can bring them back on the cheap, and they get whoever they want. They bring those guys back and then upgrade around them. As for putting a bow on the Commanders season, Clint Yates, he's watched a lot of Washington football in his life and career. Don't question that man's credentials. Plus, he's got a new radio show that's starting the Monday after the Super Bowl. We'll talk about that all with Yates as he rejoins us after a few weeks off. Next, here on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. And after a long hiatus, it is our pleasure to welcome back to the show, best friend of the show, a man who has his own radio show coming the Monday after the Super Bowl. It's called Clinton and Friends. It'll be on ESPN Radio, 10 a.m. to noon daily. It's Clinton Yates, everybody.
Thank you. I have returned. I have a child now. Yes. Shout out to Keanu Jedi. I have a new morning show. But what I don't have is disloyalty from my friends. So I will still be here on Fridays every week to talk to you, sir. And I'm happy to do it.
I appreciate that. And you were out because you had a child and were on paternity leave, but also we couldn't mess with the juju. I mean, Clinton, from the time you went out to the time that you've returned, the Commanders went on a 7-game winning streak. It went to the NFC Championship game, and then you came back on television and they lost. So are you ready to shoulder the blame for that?
Yeah, it's pretty much obviously my fault. You know, I'm the reason why they fumbled the ball 3 times in the biggest game of everybody's life. But in all seriousness, though, you know, there's the story of what the fan base has gone through that we've talked about a lot. I've told you before on this program, the term Ash Bernerstan is dead as far as I'm concerned. All these idiots on stations like yours and others who are talking about how they need to find a way to change the name, these people can be dismissed. The Commanders are real for what they are. And I mean that from a standpoint that is not just local, but national. People love this story. People enjoy what's going on with Jaden Daniels and his mom. People love the reclamation project of Dan Quinn's coaching career, and for that matter, Cliff Kingsbury as well. I think that it's okay to understand that this is no longer the closed circle of people that rooted for the burgundy and gold. It is a team that a lot of people like, and not because they're dyed in the wool from the RFK days, as I am, even though divorced, I'm coming back. I don't know if I'm back, but I really liked what I saw, because what this team and what this franchise used to be about is what's back. Good dudes who are good at football. That's all there is. It's not a bunch of rah-rah. It's not a bunch of this and a bunch of that. They executed, and when they needed it most, it let them down. We can talk about that game a little bit, but yeah, very cool moment to watch this playoff run.
Even though you're LA based now, we know you're DC born and bred, and people still talk to you as if you live here when you're talking amongst your friends in the national media. So how disorienting was it for you to have conversations, whether it's on TV, on the Round the Horn, or on ESPN Daily, or just like your friends that do this for a living, and you're having private conversations to be like, yeah, this really enjoyable outfit from Ashburn.
It was wild, because I think most people of our age had just kind of forgotten what it was even like to have a team from this place be relevant. And, you know, listen, you can talk about the Nationals. We can obviously talk about the Mystics and the Capitals, but like, the NFL is king. The NFL was king in DC long before it was king in the country. And so I think it was just interesting for a lot of people to say, oh, right, there's a team out there. People care. And to see them rise to what they did wasn't some big surprise for the people there, because we knew what the sleeping giant of the fan base was. And I said this then, I've said this throughout the course of the reconstruction, if you will. I'm so happy for the fan base. I'm so happy for my friends. I'm so happy for my family, who stuck with it as best they could per their conscience, and now have something to be proud of, have something to celebrate. Now, that being said, I was disappointed in that final game, because honestly, I don't really know that you can compare what happened in that game to what could have happened had the obvious not gone down. Three turnovers, can't win a football game. You deserve to lose. And I feel like that turned into a situation where everything you practiced that week probably went out of the window. I know they stuck with their game plan as things kept going along, but you felt like you really left a lot on the table in that last game because you kept putting the ball on the floor. And that's too bad, but that's why you play the football games, Gregory. That's the way the cookie crumbles. No shame in the game regarding this Commander season whatsoever.
For sure, and that's kind of how I've talked about it this week, is there's a bitter end to this magical season because they literally didn't play a game like that all year. Four right. turnovers, and in fact, the only time they ever played remotely close to that was when they had five turnovers against the Eagles in week 16, and they won that game. So, right. you know, you say you can't win a football game, except for the time that they did, which probably is a sign that you weren't going to win like that twice. That was not the lesson that you take out of that. I also do wonder something that I haven't talked about probably enough this week. Like, the... because they beat the Lions so thoroughly, we forget that playing the Lions is hard. And there it was kind of, you know, this happened a couple of years ago with the Niners, where there was a Niners flu where literally nobody who played the 49ers won the next week. And the Lions had, like, I think teams were like 13-2 or whatever, or 2-13 after facing the Lions. And so I do wonder if there was, yes, there's an overwhelming talent for Philadelphia, but also just kind of a hangover effect of playing Detroit, even though they had the extra day of rest and all that yeah. kind of stuff.
I mean, maybe, but, you know, this football team did a lot of things this season that I thought were interesting. After the Bears lost to them in that Hail Mary, their season disintegrated. After yeah. the Lions lost to them, boom, coordinator's gone. Like, I think that you can give a little credit on the other side, too, to what it was like to go up against this Commanders team. It wasn't easy. There are no slouches. And sort of getting farther into it, you know, I think that that was almost, if you're an Eagles fan, that wasn't almost the game you wanted. Sure, they ran up the score. Sure, they scored everywhere. But, like, did you really want a kind of a – I don't want to call it fluky, because they have one of the best rosters in the NFL, the Eagles do.
And they did a lot to force those turnovers. Like, that's a really impressive performance by Philadelphia on that run.
If I'm an Eagles fan, that's not the kind of game I want opponent aside going into a game against a team that you cannot make any mistakes and you have to know your mettle in tight situations. That was a bit of a laugher, to be quite honest, as far as that was concerned. And I'm very interested to see how Philly bounces back from that, because they have the talent, but I still don't know. They played the Rams in the snow. I still don't know if you just line up against a good team with nothing else going, can you win that football game? I think that's a real question for Philadelphia, and I see the test is going to be interesting.
Yeah, we'll obviously talk a lot more about that next Friday. We'll be right up against the game. If we take ourselves, Clint Yates, ESPN, you can watch him on Around the Horn. And again, the new show daily, Clinton and Friends, coming 10 a.m. to noon, ESPN Radio, the day after the Super Bowl. If we take ourselves out of that bitter end and just talk about the season writ large, like, what was your favorite part of the football this season?
I think my favorite part of the football was the fact that it wasn't just some scrappy team with an old guy bringing them back. This is a football franchise that won three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks. The literal movie, The Replacements, is about this franchise. This was a situation where you brought in a veteran on the other side from the linebacker position to, you know, sort of shore things up. You had a coach who really wanted to figure things out as far as what his NFL career was going to be. And you had a quarterback who's a young guy who played well and developed. They did this the right way. It wasn't just a flash in the pan. Oh, my God, look, they're winning. It was like, oh, there's really something here to build upon. And that is almost the hardest thing for any NFL franchise. They get caught in between whether they want to win, whether they want to develop. I tell you this all the time. Quarterback, worst coach position in the league. This is not the case, though, for this particular team. He actually is playing well. He's the type of kid that, you know, cares about it. That, to me, is as exciting as anything else. Never mind who gets a W on Sunday or who doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, and it just makes it so much easier to believe in the future, because I think back, and you'd have a better sense of this than I would, because while I've been here covering this for 10 years, 10 years minus 2025 is 2015. Right. It's not 2012. But there was certainly, from everything that I can gather, a sense that there was something off by the end of that season because of the injury with Bob, and there was starting to be some real consternation between the coach and the quarterback and the owners involved.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Like, how much different for you does this feel than after the 2012 season, which is the last time that anything remotely close to this was happening?
Well, it starts from the top down, and I don't want to take anything away from Bob. I didn't mean to imply that that wasn't a hopeful time at all, but everything under Snyder was always kind of shaky, and him and Shanahan always had beef. So to your exact point, that never felt like it was on the proper foundation from a front office, locker room, clubhouse standpoint that was ever really going to work outside of Bob being the lone guy that was going to take everybody to the promised land. This doesn't feel that way between, and I don't want to say Josh Harris is the only one involved or that Magic Johnson is the only one involved, but just it feels like a real operation that knows what they're doing. And we talked about this. When you asked me, what do you think Magic brings to the table? I said, credibility. You can't just walk into a building acting like a jerk when Irvin is somewhere involved. And you can't do that even if you're Josh. You have to show some level of social accountability. And that has happened. The letter he wrote to the fan base, we're not going to give up. The idea that you can actually be a class individual and run a class operation before you even think about winning, for those two things to come together is remarkable. So that feels 100% different regarding everything, never mind the results on the field. And it's a good thing to look at. Even if I wasn't born and raised in the capital of the United States of America and went to every single home game in the playoff games the last time they went to the Super Bowl, which I did, I would still think this is a great story.
No one's questioning your credentials.
They don't need to question because they already know the answer. I'm just saying, this is still a good story outside of my personal involvement or yours at that.
Speaking of good stories, DC kid makes it out. Stayed here for a long time because why would you want to go somewhere else? But eventually goes across the country to pursue his dreams. And lo and behold, he's got a national radio show now. Clinton, how excited are you for this? And what does this mean to you for people that have listened to you and watched you and read you for a long time?
I'll tell people this. The reason why I got into this business is because I wanted to be on the radio like you are now. I used to listen to stations in DC and listen to morning shows. I read the Washington Post. I listened to Tony Kornheiser. I watched George Michael. I watched all those side shows that they would do, Full Court Press and the Burgundy and Gold Report. That wasn't the name then, but you get my point. There's something about this for me as somebody that has been a consumer of media that doesn't have a word, you know? Is it a lifelong dream fulfilled? Perhaps, but it's a professional one. Is it something that I set out here to try to do? Absolutely. But for me, there's a belief in the idea that if you work hard, you keep your goals in line, and you actually try to execute them with friends along the way, and I'm being serious about that. I'm talking to you, Gregory. When things get tough, you got to help out your friends to make sure that they stay on track. To be here in this moment right now, it's a blessing. There's no other way to put it. To have that conjoined with the fact that we've welcomed a new member of our family in Keanu Jedi, I could get emotional, but, you know, it's only the radio unless you're watching on YouTube. It is truly, truly an honor and a thank.
Yeah, I'm really proud of you. We can save the emotional stuff for the actually, we don't have to save it. We already had it. We had the big emotional phone call where we were hooting, hollering, and cussing a lot. We definitely can't do that here because this is on the radio. But I will simply say I'm proud of you. I can't wait for the show. Clinton and Friends is coming 10 a.m. to noon on ESPN Radio. That is the day after the Super Bowl, which means if you're back on Fridays, we actually have one more show to do together here. Before that happens. So Clint will be back next week. We'll talk about the Super Bowl then. And until then, you, Keanu, the fam, you guys have a great weekend.
Happy Friday, kiddos.
Happy Friday. Max, unless you've secretly got a stash back there, we need to find some things that people said into microphones today and get those ready to go for the next segment.
Gotta start hunting.
Yeah, you never know what's on the internet. But we do have to find out. I will say a couple of the non-radio stuff or non-radio things that I do were done today. And there was some interesting stuff that I'll talk about in the next segment. And maybe I'll pull some clips from that. So maybe I'll be a homegrown, self-fulfilled, real things, real people said in real microphones. So, you know, just saying. Got that as an option, but I'm sure there's some stuff out there making its rounds on the internet that we can get for you to close out the show as we are wont to do. And by the way, we're closing out the show next because Georgetown and Butler playing tonight here on the Team 980. Speaking of things that are happening this weekend, though, it is time for a quick weekend preview. Haven't done this in a while, but weekend preview, which is brought to you by nobody. Still, and we haven't done it in 6 months, and it's still brought to you by nobody. Maybe because we haven't done it in 6 months. Maybe you out there could be the sponsor that changes it from us ripping off the Ernie Johnson joke from inside. The Wizards this weekend will try to avoid a 17th straight loss for the first time in team history. Remember, the last time they had this, which was earlier this season, they've had this 16-game winning streak now three times in 2 years. It looked incredibly unlikely that they wouldn't break it because they were facing the Nuggets. Well, it's just as bad this weekend. It feels just as unlikely. They're facing, on the road, the Timberwolves tomorrow. Now, the Timberwolves have had a down year relative to what we thought they would be. They're only six games over 500, but certainly they are better than the Wizards because every team in the NBA is better than the Wizards. But the T-Wolves host Washington tomorrow night. The game will be here on the Team 980. You can listen to Dave and Glenn on the call. The Wizards will be taking on Anthony Edwards and friends at 8 p.m. So that is a 7:45 pregame. Some other good games in the association tonight and tomorrow as well. You got the Mavs and Pistons tonight. Low-key, good one. Dallas only favored by 1.5 on the road. Pistons are floating around 500. They're young and they're scrappy, and they've seemed to have finally turned the corner. You have the Bucks and Spurs tonight as well, and Suns and Warriors tonight. Suns Warriors is always a bit of a war. You got KD versus Steph and all the stuff there. Those two teams have almost identical records. Phoenix favored by 1.5 on the road. And then you got Bucks and Spurs tonight as well. Wemby versus Giannis, always a good time. So, that game is at 8 o'clock. If you have a league pass, you can check that out. Tomorrow in the association, you got Lakers Knicks, the ABC ESPN game. So that's an interesting one. And then on Sunday, Mavs Cavs, at 3:30, Celtics 76ers, ESPN 6 o'clock game. If you like Grizzlies Bucks is probably actually more fun. 8:30 on ESPN on Sunday night. If you're looking for something outside of Sunday night football, the Capitals are in action. They play tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, puck drop. Catch that one over on 106.7 The Fan. Maryland this weekend, they are in action tomorrow. Sorry, I beg your pardon. They are in action on – actually, they're not in action this weekend. Am I missing this? Max, where did the Terps go? The Terps men's basketball team. Why are they not playing this weekend?
I have no idea.
What's going on here? I'm sure there's a good reason, or I'm blind, but nope, it does not look like there's a Maryland basketball game this weekend. Well, dang, I feel like a silly goose now. I tried to include them in the weekend preview, and there's nothing to preview. Well, let's go over to the women's side of things. Are the Terps, the Lady Terps playing this weekend? Let's pull up the old schedule. Big Ten. I know there's some other good games. Yeah, they're hosting Illinois tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Or sorry, on Sunday at 1 o'clock. Basically, the entire Big Ten is playing on Sunday. That includes the number one team in the land, UCLA, playing Minnesota, 3 o'clock on Big Ten Network. You also have USC Iowa, which is going to be a heck of a game. 1:30 on Fox on Sunday on the women's side of it. So you got some good college hoops this weekend on men's and women's side of things on our first weekend. Without, obviously, the NFL, you do have the Pro Bowl games this weekend. Watched a little bit of the skills competition last night. They got a little bit more, and then they got the flag football game. I think that's 3 o'clock on Sunday. So there's your weekend preview brought to you by nobody. When we get back, real things, real people said into real microphones.